with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop renewable. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Everything works. After, and by the way, just so you'll know, yeah, after things went sideways last night, I think we got phones back about 9:30 or so, but I have double-checked both lines. They ring in just dandy, and everything should be dandy for tonight. A little announcement for tonight, though. This is one of those odd nights. I'm going to knock off at about 8:30 just to give myself a break to gather my wits. Because at 9 p.m., I will be filling in for Rick Smith on The Rick Smith Show, which comes to you every night on the horn at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'll be filling in for Rick so that, he's not home yet. He's having some family values time. I think it's an anniversary or something like that. That's really wonderful that he can get away with Mrs. Ray. So stick around for that. We'll have... There's potentially 5.5 hours of conversation radio ahead of us tonight. I hope I will have a throat tomorrow. But no, we got everything sorted out. And you know, last night just chapped my butt because I was raring to go. I was loaded for bear. No, not loaded. Loaded for bear. I mean, and I could have filibobstered 3 hours. But as I said, that would have meant getting things fixed 3 hours later. And, well... Frankly, the bottom line of this program is that it is not about me, it is about you. We are not constrained by the needs of commercial, corporate, the Buy Gold Now radio. Speaking of which, there's a Buy Gold story for you out there. It's just a quick one. But our good buddy over at Stop Beck tweeted this yesterday, and I felt like you just have to know about this. But we're not constrained by that kind of stuff, so it's just us. And for me to sit here and preach and lecture and pontificate for 3 hours is the height of vanity upon my part, and I don't have that kind of ego. I just don't. So if we can't talk, there's not a whole lot of... Then what? You know, I might as well just make this a podcast and not even bother to do it live. So that's why we knocked off and fixed stuff. But everything works tonight, which is a beauty. Okay, let's get the Buy Gold Now story out of the way. Oh wait, I had a note from Horst Bjorngobler. I don't know what to do with that damn umlaut. I know what to do when Egbert Suse tells me there's an accent grave over the E. Umlauts, not so much. But, Horst dropped me a note today and said, "Hey, Bob, I checked my inbox this morning. I saw some new subscribers to the Clip channel on YouTube." That's Horzac at YouTube, H-O-R-Z-A-C, Horzac. Pretty much within minutes of each other. "I figured you must have said something on the show, and sure enough, just to let you know, it's having an effect, although it's still slow going at this stage. Don't get too excited, but we are literally one or two people away from having a dozen subscribers." I know. Calm down. Deep breath. Yeah. Horst is doing a tremendous job, and I did something this evening that I've not done before. I posted one of Horst's links over at Democratic Underground. I finally remembered what my Democratic Underground login, and have been wandering around there a little bit, and I posted over there. So if you're new to the program, you've wandered over from Democratic Underground, God bless you, and welcome. If you hang around long enough, I think you'll fall in love. Not with me, but with the idea, the program, the show, the concept, conversation radio, radio unlike anything else you can hear anywhere else. But anyway, the Buy Gold Now story. So yesterday, according to the our buddy over at Stop Beck, Glenn was doing one of his usual, you know, several times a show pitches. And I don't have an exact transcript, but it's worth noting. He said, in his exhortation to his knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing followers, in an effort to get them to buy into the idea of gold, and there's another gold story beyond this one, he said, and you know the usual pitch, there's never been a better time to buy gold. Buy gold now. Gold is your best hedge against inflation. Gold is the best investment mankind has ever had, going back thousands and thousands of years. Buy gold now. Right? Well, then the Beckerhead follows it up with this. You know, what you have to be is you have to be smart. You gotta think. You gotta think about the coming dark days. What you've gotta do, the reason you wanna buy gold from Goldline is because you wanna think like a Jew in Nazi Germany in 1935. Wow. You've got to think like a Jew in Nazi Germany in 1935, because you know what? That is just like America in 2010. Just like it. Exactly. It's a direct one-to-one correlation, right? But you can't help but pay attention to this kind of stuff, because it never happens one thing at a time. There's always something following. There's always one more bit of lunacy just a little bit further down the path. And what I mean is this. There's an organization out there called Weiss Research, Money and Markets. And Weiss Research has sent out a gold investing alert. How stupid are right-wingers to fall for this kind of stuff? I am in the wrong business. If I had even an iota of Elmer Gantry in me, I would be doing right-wing talk radio and hustling gold all day long. Instead, I sit here and I ask people to pony up 5 cents an hour for the program. You know, $10 a month. But on the right wing, you can do people out of their entire retirement portfolios by telling them the following. I wish I was kidding. Dear reader, there's an urgent situation you should be aware of immediately. A new law, hidden deep in the 956-page health care reform bill, will drastically affect your gold investments. Could this be part of a U.S. government scheme to take away the right to own gold from the citizens as soon as possible? Yet despite that threat, very few Americans know about this law and the severe invasion of privacy it would cause. Even fewer have taken the necessary steps to preserve their wealth. God, you can almost hear the clop. Of the ominous footfalls down a darkened stairwell behind some poor, innocent right-winger who hasn't bought their gold yet. I want to warn you, the law is already on the books. It takes effect at the beginning of 2012. By then, it might not be safe or profitable for you to own gold coins, gold bullion, gold bars, or even an ETF that holds gold. But there is one gold investment class protected from this law. And in the past 2 years, this unique gold investment could have made you 975%, 12 times more than physical gold. Fact is, the more than physical gold. It's intangible gold. It's chocolate gold. Imaginary gold. And it profits to the tune of 975 imaginary percent. The new law could make this investment even more valuable. Turning $10,000 into $97,500 could be just the start. The official law is in section 9006, 90006 of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. I had no idea. Thank God for Weiss Research. Let's all say the Pledge of Allegiance, Jesus. Very few people have read at all the 10,909 sections of that bill, and even fewer understand the ramifications of Section 909006 on gold. The health care bill has nothing to do with gold, which is exactly why Congress hid the law there. Wait, that's Priceline, isn't it? Never mind. They certainly weren't going to put out a press release when they're taking away the rights of private citizens. There it is. Freeze-dried gold. I think we even mentioned this on the program the other night. One-third the weight and 12 times as valuable. Just add hot wing nut. Oh, this thing goes on and on. And it closes, their ruse appears to be working. Oh, that inscrutable Obama! He's probably going to get all our gold and trade it to India for mangoes! Wait, that was George Bush. Because the urgent gold investing alert was headed thusly. President Obama wants to confiscate your gold. Buried deep inside the health care reform bill is a law that could set the stage for the federal government to take away all your gold. Get your hands off my gold, you filthy ape! By 2012, it probably won't be safe to own gold bars, rare coins, or gold ETFs. How stupid is the right wing? Honestly. Do they sit there listening to their little Glenn Beck programs? Marvelline! Marvelline, our gold bullion ain't safe no more! That's all right, dear, we ain't got none. That Obama, he's still communist! Yes, dear. God, I wish he'd go back to watching Gunsmoke. Eesh. But they do. They believe this stuff. And they sit around and they talk in their little wingnut groups about it, never realizing that they're being had. They can't even keep their story straight. We're not sure if you're supposed to buy freeze-dried gold or the real stuff. It depends on whether or not you're thinking like a Jew in Nazi Germany in 1935. Amazing. But that's just the beginning of the program. There's a million other things. I wanted to start with a couple of stories because they're sort of distantly kissing cousins. On the one hand, today is a bit of an anniversary. I don't know if you realize this or not. Maybe you do. You know, out there in the wide, wide world of law, There is something called the statute of limitations. We often think about them in terms of like 2 years. You know, you got a car wreck, you got 2 years to file suit, you know, that kind of stuff. But generally in the criminal law, especially in the several states, there is, for instance, here in this state wherein I reside, wild, wonderful, almost level West by God, Virginia, there's no statute of limitations on a murder. There's no statute of limitations on a burglary. There's no statute of limitations on a grand larceny. There's no statute of limitations on an arson. There's no statute of limitations on malicious wounding. There's no statute of limitations on embezzlement. In short, there is no statute of limitations on any save perhaps one felony. And the statute of limitations on misdemeanors is 1 year. Okay? But it's not that way across the board. The federal law contains a number of statutes of limitations on criminal conduct. Jason Leopold has a story out today over at Truthout, truthout.org. And I'm going to share just a little bit of it with you. Nearly 3 years after he was appointed to investigate the destruction of at least 92 interrogation videotapes, a dozen of which showed two high-value detainees being subjected to various torture techniques by CIA interrogators, Special Prosecutor John Durham has determined that he does not have enough evidence to secure an indictment against anyone responsible for the purge. It was just a crime that was too doggone hard to solve. No, not really. Department of Justice spokesman Matthew Miller said in a statement today that Durham, a U.S. attorney from Connecticut, has, quote, concluded that he will not pursue criminal charges for the destruction of interrogation videotapes. Interestingly, they announced that today, and the statute of limitations for bringing a charge for destroying that vital evidence of war crimes expired yesterday. Well, of course he won't be bringing charges. He let the statute run out. Now, the spokesman before U.S. Attorney Durham said that the investigation is still an open matter. But punishing, just prosecuting even, let alone punishing, you got to prosecute first. Prosecuting whatever individuals destroyed that evidence ain't going to happen. The DOJ clarifying that the investigation is still an open matter, but DOJ will not pursue criminal charges for the destruction of the tapes. Just in case you're thinking maybe this is like Jack the Ripper or something, or maybe Professor Moriarty, where he's just almost impossible to catch. No. We know. We don't surmise. We know that Jose Rodriguez, the head of the CIA's clandestine division, ordered the destruction of the videotapes in November 2005. This was shortly after the Washington Post exposed the existence of black site CIA torture chambers in overseas prisons. The CIA was using overseas prisons to torture detainees because since it wasn't on U.S. soil, it was deemed that it was outside the reach of the U.S. legal or jurisprudential systems. Rodriguez claimed that he got clearance to destroy the evidence. Let's say that again. Destroy the evidence based on advice he received from CIA lawyers. One of the witnesses said, "I can't believe Rodriguez got away with it." Really? You can't? I can. Why? Because to prosecute Rodriguez would be looking back. And we can't be looking back. We must always be looking forward. That'll show them. Meanwhile, Robert Bennett is Rodriguez's D.C.-based lawyer. And he said, "We're pleased that the DOJ has decided not to go forward against Mr. Rodriguez. This is the right decision because of the facts and the law. Jose Rodriguez is an American hero, a true patriot, who only wanted to protect his people and his country." Horse hockey. Jose Rodriguez is a thug. Jose Rodriguez is a criminal. Jose Rodriguez is a traitor to his country. Because any man who would cover up evidence of torture in clear contravention of federal law and the Constitution itself, let alone those quaint Geneva Conventions, that man is not fit to live in civil society. Isn't it interesting that the statute ran on the same day that Decision Pants was released by George W. Bush? I find it interesting because while George has been trying to tell people about other stories about, you know, how Babs showed him the baby in the bottle and things like that, a whole bunch of the book is taken up with him defending the fact that he ordered other human beings to be subjected to useless, pointless, meaningless, nothing but sadistic acts of torture. Jason Leopold has done his usual great job with this article. It's over at Truthout again. Special prosecutor declines to file criminal charges over destruction of CIA torture tapes. We murdered an entire country over no evidence at all. But with evidence locked down lead pipe cinch evidence of not only the commission of a crime, but the person who perpetrated it, that we will not prosecute. Well, Bob, maybe we'll just wait and prosecute him for the actual torture. Well, how are you going to do that? The evidence was destroyed! Welcome to a nation of laws and not of persons. Wrong. There are little signals, little blinking lights, that if you pay close attention, you will see winking in the distance. And those winking lights are a trail a beacon, if you will, to the descent of this nation into the filth of fascism. We don't have anything except the present with which to deal. We don't have any alternate realities in which we could... I mean, sure. Would Crisco John Ashcroft have prosecuted? Oh, hell no. He was a partisan. Would Torture Boy Gonzalez have prosecuted? Oh, hell no. He wanted more of them, more tortured. Would the Bush admit? No. But this isn't the Bush administration. Or at least we were led to believe that it's not. And they refuse to prosecute an open and shut case. And you can only ask, why? Why? No, citizen, you cannot ask why. Asking why is not patriotic in teabag America. Because as long as the sacred mantra of national security, citizen, is repeated, that trumps everything. Everything. Ron, writing in from Raleigh, says, "Hey, Bob, when the hell did the Department of Justice become Hamilton Burger? You remember him. He was the hapless DA who lost to Perry Mason every week. The only guy doing time is the poor schnook that the whistle blew on the tax evaders at UBS. I'm really getting tired of the BS. No one goes to trial. No one is punished." We fetishize punishment. We fetishize torture. And we reserve our most sacrosanct status for the people who do it. Indeed. And of course, that's not... There's a couple of legal stories. More than a couple. There's also the fact that a case was argued today by the Obama administration. In which the Obama administration argued its absolute right to murder U.S. citizens at will. Man, what kind of a phrase is that? It's a horrifying phrase, is what it is. But it's the truth. The Obama administration argued today, in the case of Mr. Alwaki, that it has the absolute right to order the murder of an American citizen without trial, without charge, without anything remotely resembling due process of law. Screw the Fifth Amendment, screw the 14th. Just kill them. We're talking, of course, about Anwar al-Awlaki. And he has posted a number of incendiary statements on the Internet, a lot of them on YouTube. Some of them were removed from YouTube toward the end of last week by YouTube at the request of the federal government. The federal government made that request after a request by and this is a guy that we all largely like, Representative Anthony Weiner from New York. He said that Anwar al-Awlaki's words were too dangerous to be tolerated in the marketplace of ideas. And called for those words to be removed from that marketplace. Representative Weiner argued that these words were dangerous words. That these words were so very dangerous that they couldn't even be heard, lest they cause harm, grievous, deadly harm. You know, I heard about this last week and I thought, wait a minute. Mr. Anwar al-Awlaki is several thousand miles from American shores. And yet his words are so dangerous that they are intolerable to the United States government. I'll tell you the truth. I haven't gone and listened to Mr. al-Awlaki's words because I don't need a bunch of humorless guys in black suits with skinny black ties who talk to their wrists showing up in my driveway. Does that make me a coward? Maybe. Or maybe it just makes me a guy who doesn't want his kids gunned down before his very eyes. Because that whole national security rubric is, well, it's a defense to just about anything that needs defending now, isn't it? Why can't I say this name? Mr. Anwar al-Awlaki was born in the United States. He has certain rights appertaining thereunto. But those rights have been declared null and void. And his life forfeit. Because of his words. But I was struck when I heard Anthony Weiner's call for the removal of Mr. al-Awlaki's words from YouTube, because it struck me as being a reminder of how very good we have become at swallowing mountains and gagging on gnats. Because if the words of a man sitting in the desert somewhere thousands of miles away posted to YouTube are too dangerous for Americans to hear, then what about the words of a raving madman in a radio studio somewhere on the east coast of the United States, probably New York City, who has actually inspired people to take up arms and go with full murderous homicidal intent in search of victims that only he has named? I do not dispute that words can be the incitement to violence. I don't dispute that in the least. It is, in fact, an argument that I have made. But in worrying about Mr. Al-Awlaki's words, it seems that we are engaged in a process of plucking the mote from our brother's eye while being most disinterested in the beam that projects from our own. Because Glenn Beck is trying to get someone killed. Rush Limbaugh is trying to get someone killed. Sean Hannity is trying to get someone killed. O'Reilly is trying to get someone killed. Neil Bortz is trying to get someone killed. Michael Savage is trying to get someone killed. But I have yet to hear Anthony Weiner stand up and call for the suppression of the speech of any of those white men. But he certainly had time to demand that YouTube censor Anwar al-Awlaki. And the Obama administration has time to stand up in court and argue that the President of the United States has the unilateral right to declare forfeit the life of any American citizen he deems needs killing. Now, if you think that this gives me pleasure to be saying this about a Democratic president, you are so wrong. This is one of those places where I really do transcend politics. Democrat, Republican, Socialist, Green Party, Bull, Moose, Whig, I care not a whit. When this country reaches the point where the chief executive has life or death power over individual human beings, absent anything resembling a constitutional process, then our little experiment in representative self-government is dead. Not dying, dead. Get used to it. Keep your head down. Don't make waves. Otherwise, one of those humorless men in the black suits with the skinny black ties who's constantly talking to his wrist may very well put one in your chest and two in your head, like that poor bastard aboard the Mavi Marmara who was murdered by the IDF in the same fashion. When intelligence takes you out, that's how they take you out. It's the Udi and Kudi treatment for anyone. Do I think that you sitting at home driving to work, listening to the podcast, are likely to do anything to incur the wrath of a unilateral declaration that your life is forfeit? No, I don't think you're going to do that. But it is the fact that this government has gotten to the point where it feels that it has the unilateral right to make the determination of whether you have, that should be a clarion call to anyone who gives even a tinker's damn about the last vestiges of civil liberties that exist in this country. News Ninja Susan noting, Bob, last time I looked, the Constitution says nothing about high, middle, and low justice. Thought that was taken care of by the Magna Carta. Yeah, me too, Susan, but the Magna Carta, like the much more recent Geneva Conventions, is probably deemed quaint at this point. I read that headline today about the Obama administration going to court to argue that it has this power, and something just turned over in my stomach. And all you can do is pray for a so-called activist judge to say, no, you don't. But that's okay, because the Obama administration will appeal all the way to the rats at the Supreme Court, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, who'll go, hell yeah, kill him twice, crucify him, tear him into little bitty pieces, and take him to the four corners of the earth. Do it! He's Arab! Kill him! But we can't say that. We can't even bring ourselves to suggest that incitement to riot, incitement to violence, might be applicable to Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, Michael Savage, and the rest of that filthy ilk. Oh, no. You know why? Because they have the power to defend themselves. You know who went to bat for Mr. Al-Awlaki? The American Civil Liberties Union. The same people who saved the rotten, festering ass of one of those people who is trying to incite redneck, ignorant Americans to murder, even as I speak, Rush Limbaugh. Tough to stomach. On a much more personal level, I imagine it's tough to stomach this latest ruling from the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Texas. A little girl, a cheerleader. She went to practice every day. She learned her cheers. She learned her jumps. I'm sure that she was a perfectly adequate cheerleader in Silsbee, Texas. She was 16 years old in October 2008 when she was at a party. She was dragged into a room, thrown onto the floor by several young folks, and she was raped by one Rakeem Bolton. Rakeem Bolton was a star on her high school's football and basketball teams. Rakeem Bolton and one of his teammates were arrested 2 days later. But in Texas, the high school sports occupies a position right next to religion. And a couple of weeks later, a county grand jury refused to indict either of the young men. For rape. Later on, they were indicted on charges of sexual assault. But in the meanwhile, in February 2009 came the basketball season. And the young lady, whose initials are only HS, was a cheerleader. And she was obliged, she could have quit. She was obliged to cheer for the basketball team, and she did. But then, when players came to the foul line, the girls on the cheer squad were required to cheer for the person at the foul line by name. And when Rakeem Bolton had been fouled and sent to the line, she sat down on a chair and refused to cheer. She was punished. She was punished. The school board said she had no right not to cheer for her rapist. Well, the case made it all the way to the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. It is a haven of vicious, vile wingnuttery, such as is not matched in many other circuits in this country. It is, it includes one Judge Priscilla Owen. And Priscilla Owen was one of those toxic judges that the gang of Democrats rolled over and got their bellies scratched over in exchange for not preventing her accession to the court. It is a court known for its corruption. When some Katrina victims brought suit against the energy industry, so many judges on the Fifth Circuit panel were required to recuse themselves that there weren't even enough judges left to hear the appeal. Priscilla Owen took thousands upon thousands of dollars in campaign contributions from Enron. Then she turned around and wrote a key opinion that reduced Enron's taxes by $15 million when she was sitting on the Texas Supreme Court. This is the court that sanctioned young H.S. because she sued, claiming that the school board ought not punish her for refusing to cheer for the man who, while she was held to the ground, forcibly had sex with her. Oh, hell yeah, in Teabag America, you damn well better cheer, girlie, or you'll get some more, and this time we'll put some stank on it. These are three cases that are more than a little bit disturbing as we contemplate the America where we think we live here as we wind down the last little bit of 2010. I would not want to be, for any amount of money, Douglas Letter. He's terrorism litigation counsel for the Justice Department, and he is no Atticus Finch. You know, Atticus says in To Kill a Mockingbird that sometimes you just have to do a job even though you know you're going to lose, that sometimes you just have to participate in the fight. This is not that. It was Douglas Letter who stood before the court on Monday, yesterday, and argued that the Obama administration has the power to simply order the extrajudicial execution of Anwar al-Awlaki. He said that Congress, in the wake of the 9/11 attacks, had authorized the executive branch to use all necessary and appropriate force against al-Qaeda and associated groups. Arguing to the court, Mr. Letter said, if we use lethal force, we do so consistent with the law. I would not, under any set of circumstances, trade place with Mr. Letter. Because while it is sometimes troubling to have one, And while it does indeed cause a significant amount of pain sometimes, it is also comforting to have a conscience. And Mr. Letter has none. Mr. Letter has nothing but his desire to draw his breath and his pay. The man took an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America and stood in a court of law in this country and pissed all over it. The only way you can do that is when you are completely devoid of conscience. Because I'm sure that Mr. Letter, as a good American, feels quite certain the government would never need to do that to him, what he was arguing it should be done, the arguing should be done to Mr. Al-Awlaki. But that's the funny thing about the fickleness of extrajudicial murder. One day you're Henry VIII's best friend, and the next thing you know, they're sitting there kneeling over while they're sharpening the axe. One day Henry VIII is on the throne, the next day Bloody Mary's on the throne. One day Catholics are in for it, the next day it's the Protestants. Dangerous business. Dangerous business. Depressing business. Anti-American business. And moreover, evidence, if you will, evidence of the rather rapid decline of the American Empire. It's 8 minutes before the hour. 7 minutes before the hour. It just happened. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. The phones are working again. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. We will be back. This is The Horn.
Second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Faith No More via John Fox and Evidence for the 1995 album King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime. Did you hear those guitars? Wow. And then, of course, there's the lyrics. I love it when we can make the music fit the topicality, if you know what I mean. It is about a minute before the hour. We're actually ahead of schedule for a change. That don't happen very often. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. And a gentle reminder, like I said, if you haven't subscribed to Horzac, H-O-R-Z-A-C, Horzac's channel over at YouTube, do please, because it's a great way to be able to pass around little clips of The Horn and help people know what it is that you enjoy so very much. Now, Mr. Letter, that made the argument before the federal court that it's okay to kill Americans on the whim of the executive branch. See, that's what Martin Niemöller was talking. I think I did that umlaut right. That's what Martin Niemöller was talking about when he wrote, "They came first for the communists, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a communist. And then they came for the trade unionists, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Jew. Then they came for me, and that by that time, no one was left to speak up." You know, you would think that a president who has had more threats on his life by more disaffected, sick, skin-headed, right-wing, filthy, Republican-voting, Klan-loving, tea-bagging, murderous bastards would have a little more sensitivity than to send to the court his people arguing that he has the right to declare forfeit the life of another American. You would think that he had a little bit more sensitivity than that. But I guess he don't. So let's go straightways to the phone and quit all this shilly-shallying about. This is, after all, Conversation Radio. You know the number, 877-443-2366. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. New callers are always welcome, and old friends as well. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, what was that? I'm sorry it's for you to repeat, but I was kind of, couldn't even believe I was hearing that. What's the deal with that cheerleader?
Oh, yeah.
If you can kind of, because I, okay, yeah.
Rakeem Bolton, big star for the local the high school the football and basketball team.
Mm-hmm. And what state is this?
Texas.
Okay, yeah.
Silsby, Texas. Some of the gang dragged the young lady into a room, threw her to the floor, and Rakeem Bolton did his thing. He raped her. I don't know why I'm using a euphemism like that. I'm ashamed of myself. He raped her repeatedly, as did another guy. And then the young lady went back to the cheer squad, and when she quietly and politely sat down instead of having to cheer for her rapist by name, the school board said, "No, girlie, get up there and cheer for your rapist." And she filed suit and lost.
Okay, well, I mean, did she, was this, what, after she had alerted the school to what went down, or what?
Oh, hell yeah. The guy, I mean, she didn't have to alert him, Sandra. The guy was eventually indicted.
Oh, okay. So, and then she went back to her cheerleading activities, and they expected her to cheer for this fiend who was out on bail or something?
See. But here's the best part. I left out the best part. She lost in the lower court and appealed to the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which sits in New Orleans but handles Texas, that chunk of Texas as well, or maybe all of Texas.
Right.
And not only did they tell her, sister, shut up and cheer for your rapist, they said, while you're at it, pay the school district's legal fees, because they said that her claim was far-fetched and frivolous.
Wow. I mean, I thought that's what you were saying, but I was just couldn't even wrap my head around it because it was just too over the top. Wow. And this is some teenage girl, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's terrible. Man, well, you know, I am so, this whole Anthony Weiner, I mean, you know, that dude is some rabid supporter of Israel, right? You know that.
Oh, big time.
I mean, it's just over the top.
No, I can, I have real respect for him when he's talking about the things that are important in the way of progressive ideals and liberal liberal values, but yeah, he loses his mind where Israel's concerned.
Well, I mean, this is what he said about the flotilla attack. He said, even if we're the only country on earth that sees the facts here, the United States should stand up for Israel. I mean, you know what I mean? What more do you need to hear? It's like, yikes. But for him to decide what speech is dangerous, you know, that definitely spells the end of this little experiment, along with, you know.
Well, doesn't it? I mean, am I being over the top here?
Well, I mean, I guess in some quarters they would think it's over the top because people are so stupid. They think that we can have this sort of no more rule of law, as they like to say, and just sort of randomly assign. And that's what's being played out, because I swear to God, that story in Vail, Colorado, where this dude...
Oh, my God. I read that when you sent it. The Colorado... A guy in Colorado vacationing, right? Dr. Milo.
He got hit.
Yeah, he's pedaling along through Vail. He's on vacation. And this isn't, you know, some schmuck. This guy is a 37-year-old liver transplant surgeon. You know, those are the kind of people who can go vacation in Vail, I guess, from Jersey. And this investment broker just deliberately takes his Mercedes and flattens him, and then pleads, "I didn't see him. I thought bump."
Yeah, except he was trying to hide his bumper and
yeah,
mirror.
He was trying to hide the mirror and the bumper when the cops showed up.
And he called the Mercedes dealers to repair his shit.
And then the fun part starts, because the prosecutor looks at him and says, "Well, this is a constituent. He lives here. Andy, we can't lock him up." And pleads it down to a misdemeanor on the this was the part that just laid me low. The argument of the filthy little prosecutor in Eagle County, Colorado, who said, "Well, restitution is a very important part of a criminal case, and we don't want to take away his ability to pay restitution by putting him in prison."
Yeah, right. That's what insurance policies are for, and you know he has several of them. So, yeah, that argument is out the window. I mean, this is, to me, it just all blends into this sort of the two-tier system that used to be in the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just straight up out in front now, because nothing ever happens. There's never any accountability. And I blame it on the high government officials who have been getting away with stuff on and on and on and on since, you know, I mean, before 2000, but 2000 is always my point where I say that the whole shit came undone in this country when the Supreme Court interfered with an election.
Well, I don't think that's a bad place to draw that line, Sandra.
No, it's been downhill ever since in that regard, especially when justice is involved. And, you know, some poor smuck, anybody else in that situation, your job isn't considered. Give me a damn break. I mean, it's so blatant, though. And, you know, people are a little bit outraged, but, you know, they'll go back to their dancing with the skaters or whatever the hell it is now. And, you know, it just goes on. In the meanwhile, we have, you know, President Obama trying to be able to execute Americans?
See, I think I'm ashamed of myself, Sandra, because this story's been around for a while.
Oh no, it's been around. It's been churning because it's just kind of they keep trying to have it sanctioned, you know, and they're trying to work it through the courts, and it's just kind of like, what in the world? I don't really care what the situation is. Once they frame this particular person, well, game over, right?
Yeah, and beyond that, this idea that you can have murder, executive murder by whisper, really is a signpost toward the apocalypse. If you ask me.
Well, it's just despotism.
Because you know what? For everybody who says, well, you know, I mean, he's Barack Obama and he'd never do that frivolously.
No, I ain't talking about people now. I'm talking about
institutions.
The institution and our protection from the state. Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm like.
But see, like I said, Sandra, this story's been around for a while, and I got to thinking about it because it's been under my skin for, like I said, a week. Ever since I heard the Anthony Weiner gets YouTube clips pulled story, and I got to thinking about you remember when the bloggers got to go and talk to Barack Obama?
Yeah.
Reckon why one of them didn't say, "Mr. President, what makes you think you've got the power to order the murder of American citizens at your word?"
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, why? Why do you think that question wasn't asked?
I think just getting walked into the White House scares you water-barreled.
Well, and also, though, it just goes in line with, you know, the sort of no challenge, you know, on his left ever, and he just rolls over. You know, if you're not gonna challenge presidential power on this, I really don't know what's left to challenge. This is life and death now, and you're going to be okay with some executive having... This is like some sort of Tudor England or something here, where these people have power over life and death just by word. You know, where are we living?
But I've got a question for you, and, you know, it's kind of a loaded question, too. Who do you think is likely to succeed in doing harm more immediately? A right-wing gas bag like Beckerhead exhorting people to murder the Tides Foundation and liberals and communists and so on and so forth and George Soros, yada, yada, yada. Who's likely to have more success, Glenn Beck or Anwar al-Awlaki?
Yeah, exactly. I'm
because so far there's a few empty rounds on the pavement out in California where you live that are direct and proximate result of the words of Glenn Beck.
Exactly. No, that's exactly the direction that it's headed towards. I'm not worried about no freak in Yemen. And by the way, maybe if they start raining bombs down on those people, they might get off the YouTube.
Now, don't let some right-winger hear you saying that, Sandra. They'll accuse you of wanting to have a sensitivity group session with Al-Qaeda.
Well, it's whatever. It's just beyond, at this point, it's just, it's so ignorant, and it just really gets on my nerve. It's sort of like, you're going to tell me that, oh, because they're Muslim, we're going to be able to disavow from any Bill of Rights or any protection from the state. You're willing to accept that now because of some fake war on terror? I mean, people got to be stupid here, okay? They need to be looking at this. This is some scary shit. I mean, I don't care if they're not worried about the Negro, but... the next one, what about that person?
Well, and see, that's one of the reasons, that's one of the things that gives me pause, just because of, I guess, my natural liberalness in this Texas high school case. Because, you know what? The cheerleader was a little white girl. And Rakeem Bolton is an African-American male. And frankly, in Hardin County, Texas, I wouldn't want to be Rakeem Bolton. I don't know how, except for the fact that he was an athlete.
Yeah.
You know, how was there not a run on pillowcases at the Walmart in Hardin County?
I'm not too sure, you know. I mean, that's definitely, yeah.
By the way, he got 1 year in jail.
Okay, well.
With a sentence suspended.
I guess maybe, I don't know. That's different. I would think that would be, you know, strange fruit For real, though.
And I'm not in any way saying that it should be. I don't.
No, but I understand, you know, where we're at. But sometimes that's sports. That'll cancel out just by anything.
Well, in Texas, it will.
You know?
It really, really will. You know, Kate wrote in from up in Montana, and she said, "My, aren't we lucky the cheerleader was brought up to be ladylike? I don't know why she didn't do the rapist bodily harm. She's got some class just sitting down quietly."
You know, I'll roll out one of them carry-ons you can do down there. Shit. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm sort of just, yeah, I'm dumbfounded by that story. And, yeah, it would be interesting to sort of investigate further and see what's really going on, because that is Texas. And Texas, by the way, I can't understand, you know, those four people down there with that horrible Rick Perry. Is that for real?
Oh, yeah, they want to bail out on, they're gonna solve Texas's budget problems by bailing out on Medicaid.
No, this is, I mean, you know, talking about a war on the poor, man, they really have declared. I mean, it's open
season. Oh, they've got the butternut uniforms out and they marching.
Yes, yeah, open season on the poor and struggling. Unbelievable. But, listen, so, I know this is a bit of an old story, but I'm sorry. That Bill Maher, yikes!
You know he leveled on Jon Stewart.
Oh no, you said that Jon Stewart was whining. I mean, what in the world could he say to that? He blew that shit up.
Well, I caught Stewart's clip from last night's show.
Okay, I just wondered what he said, because it's like, what are you gonna say, fool? Because he made it as crystal clear. I couldn't even believe what I was looking at.
Oh, he was precious, John was. He was real precious about it, because he showed clips in black and white of him in a tank top, T-shirt, and boxing shorts taking imaginary blows to the head and spitting out teeth.
Oh.
And then he said, but of course, that's not what we said. We didn't say what they said we said. And then announced he was going to have a new rally next week. And it was going to be the rally to restore whatever level of blame we're going to assign to both of the sides that are blameworthy, or some such bullshit as that.
Well, no, I don't know. He can backtrack as much as he wants, and I'm sure his sort of Sam Waterston and all them other middle-of-the-road people will support it until the cows come home. But, what Bill Maher said was too damn true, especially the stuff about the air. Oh, look, there's a mountain? Come on! I don't know, I just thought that killed me, because I live in California. I'm like, damn, Skippy, in the 70s, it wasn't breathable up in this mug, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
It is now.
And people who haven't experienced that really can't conceptualize, but the idea of, look, it's a mountain, yeah, that kind of floored me, too.
No, that shit was funny. And, you know, I don't know, I just thought that it was just so nice to hear someone actually step up and, you know, be just sort of straightforward about it, you know? It was entertaining.
But I think... Yet it's funny, I've checked some boards and stuff, and you'd be surprised the number of people who are out there defending Stewart.
Oh, well, that's the thing. I mean, that's always, I can imagine that. It's just sort of never-ending, which I don't really get. I'm kind of, I mean, I like Stewart, but, you know, after he did that...
But you know what? This thing took a lot of bloom off of Stewart's rose for me.
Yeah, no, after he did that equivalency stuff, it's crazy because... you know, as Maher said, he ain't heard no Democratic leaders talking about 9/11 was an inside job. And no matter how I think about it, 9/11, that was crack. He said, oops, and cut, you know?
Yeah. Well,
it was fantastic.
And the idea that, you know, sometimes having two sides does not mean that both sides have equally valuable opinions to contend.
But anyway, this is sort of, you know, I mean, I can imagine, I'm trying to figure out how they're trying to defend it, but I'm sure they are. Anyway.
Well, the clip is up there at Comedy Central if you want to go watch, Sandra. Like I said, it's immensely cute. And you know what I found more interesting than actually the content of his self-apologia was the fact that his guest later that evening was none other than Rick Goodhair Perry.
Well, yeah, that's the thing that's killing me. That guy is beyond disgusting with his, everything after before the 20s with the progressives was all horrible. I guess that includes the 19th Amendment, too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're disgusting. It's like no matter what you say to argue back, they just sort of brush it aside. Like the 8-hour work day and all the other things that the real progressive movement brought to us. Is he kidding? If I hear another slam on a New Deal, my head's going to explode, you know? It's horrible. It's horrible what's going on out there.
And yet I saw something earlier today that was quite fascinating. There's a historian out there. He's an FDR historian, and he's arguing that there's nothing new in the teabaggers, but that in point of fact, the teabaggers are merely a retread of the organization. I'm trying to find the story here. The organization whose only purpose during the FDR days was to oppose every last bit of New Deal legislation. Because apparently there was such an organization, and I'm damned if I can find my way.
What, the League?
The League. Yeah, Liberty League, was that it?
Yeah, but that was just quasi-fascist, though.
And the teabaggers aren't?
Well, I'm just saying, though, but that was straight up. That was what that was. The Tea Party, I think they're more sort of white nationalists to me, but it's all the same at the end of the day, isn't it?
One man's fascist is another man's militia man.
And I'm laughing at you know Obama over in Indonesia, you know, where they do genocide every other decade. That just looks jacked up. I just had flashes of Carter and Ford and all these other freaks who supported, you know, the sort of treachery in Indonesia.
Oh, like East Timor and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but it must be, you know, to me, I'm laughing because I'm like, damn, don't they think you was born there? I can't believe you.
Well, it's all out there, Sandra. Right now the right wing is having a hissy about the fact that he set foot in a mosque.
Oh, shit, see? He went on tour, right? He was talking about, I didn't recognize this place except for this one little building. You know, I heard a little speech. I was laughing. I said, Barry, it ain't going to be a country here when you get back if you keep going on.
Well, it's like I said last night. He desperately needs somebody inside that administration whose only job is to periodically walk inside the Oval Office and look at him and go, Jesus, Barack!
Oh, no. I mean, listen, I'm already trying to recover from the CEO of Boeing greeting him in India. I'm like, hello, where are the Indians? You know, why are those people greeting you when you landed? I mean, he is so suspect now as just a corporate toady. I'm sorry. That's where it's at for me. I'm like, yeah, damn, dude. You definitely gone.
But there are some remarks out there. Let me see if I can find this.
Okay.
I had a clip of him where he answered a question about jihad. And this is precious. It won't take me but a second here. There it is. Here's the audio. Fox.
Was this over at a press conference?
Well, yeah, this was like a town hall meeting in India, and okay. one of the ubiquitous attack blondes on Fox, along with Juan Williams, were analyzing what Barack Obama had to say. This is magnificent.
Martha.
All right, well, here's a headline this morning. The U.S. is, quote, on the right path to a better relationship with the Muslim world. These words from President Obama this morning as he traveled through Indonesia. Meanwhile, positive reaction coming out of the Muslim world in India to promise that Mr. Obama made on jihad this Sunday. Here,
promises made by Obama on jihad?
What?
I told you, this is precious.
Oh, no.
And I didn't know that India was the Muslim world.
I
I thought they were a democratic secular state.
Right, that's the latest.
Yeah, don't tell the attack bond, Sandra.
He is. This has gotten a lot of attention, this particular soundbite. So here he is answering a question that was posed to him during a town hall event at a college in India. Take a look.
What is your take or opinion about jihad?
The phrase jihad has a lot of meanings within Islam.
And he would know that because he is, after all, a Muslim.
You're killing me. Obama, damn.
Like, you know, bring the guy on the trips, too. You know, the Jesus Barack guy.
No. He's spun. That dude is spun out. No, he didn't.
Yeah, there's more.
Okay.
You're not going to be okay.
And it's subject to a lot of different interpretations. I think all of us recognize that this great religion, in the hands of a few extremists, has been distorted to justify violence towards innocent people that is never justified. I think all of us have to fundamentally reject the notion that violence is a way to mediate our differences.
Now, what's the pull clip? You take away, if you're, say, Andrew Breitbart or somebody like that, you take away all that Shirley Sherrod shit in front of it.
No, it's Barack Sherrod.
Yeah, and you're left with this.
Towards innocent people that is never justified. I think all of us have to fundamentally reject.
Okay, so forget all of that. Here's the right-wing pull clip.
The notion that violence is a way to mediate our differences.
Violence is a way to mediate our differences, says Muslim president from Kenya. How long? How long, Sandra? How long?
Not only that, but that whole thing about the different definitions of jihad, that one right there, you know, he left, and that's, wow. Barry does jihad. Come on. He really needs some handlers. I think my kitty could handle him better at this point. Who's helping, dude?
The Jesus Barack guy is not there.
Well, no, but Steve, isn't he aware of the Barry in Indonesia? I mean, damn, the right wing must be, wow.
Why not just go ahead and issue and hand over the long form Indonesian birth certificate before he goes?
But don't forget to have Alan Combs and Rush Limbaugh present when that happens.
Oh, no doubt.
You heard about that. I forget what congressman said that, but I was just like, oh no. Well, see, the hits keep coming. That's man. I don't even know what to say. Where's he going next? Japan?
Not sure, but I did see you know about all those right wing, those right wing interview pitches that I'm forever talking about getting, that I get 10 of for 100 of for every left wing interview pitch.
Yeah.
I got one just the other day. It was it was from one of these right wing filth merchants, and it was Obama bowing update.
Well, who's he bowing to now that they don't like?
I think he might have nodded his head at somebody in India.
Well, he was like hugging, or he had his arm around the waist of the turban dude, the prime minister of India. That was a funny photo. I'm surprised they didn't get him in a turban himself, but I guess he negated that.
Well, if nothing else, his handlers must have seen the pictures of George Bush and Pooty Poot in the silk Pagliacci pajamas.
Oh my God!
And hopefully, and John Fox tells me that AIPAC is about to start, and that's why he's in Asia now.
Well, see, but he decided to say boo to Netanyahu though. Netanyahu is coming out. We're gonna build whatever we want to build. Sit down, nigga. I mean, he didn't say that, but Obama had the nerve to like.
No, the word would be schwarze.
Well, Obama had the nerve to mouth some sort of displeasure, right, while he's in the largest Muslim country in the world. Oh, it just keeps on giving, don't it? Why are he going to say something bad about Israel in that setting? I don't know. All of it is just, I don't know what's happening to Obama. He might need some sort of vacation. A permanent vacation.
In Indonesia.
I'm like, this dude.
No, this gives me no pleasure, Sandra. I mean, we carry on and we laugh and we chuckle and stuff, but this gives me no pleasure.
Oh, I know. Listen, no,
You know, there was the big story in India where there was supposed to be a press conference at Hyderabad House. Aren't you proud of me for remembering?
Wow.
And Robert Gibbs found his spine because at the last minute, the Indians said they had like 8 members of the Johnny on the Spot crack White House press corps.
Oh, yeah, he had a little meltdown, right?
And the Indians said, we're only going to let 5 of them in. And Robert Gibbs bravely put his foot in the doorway and looked at Indian security and said, they all go in with me or they don't go in at all. And all I was left thinking was, thank God none of those Johnny on the Spot crack White House press corps members were members of the professional left, or he would have stomped their foot for them.
Well, yes, you know what I mean. It's like, it's funny when their spine stiffens up. It's just really random. I can't stand that guy, actually.
Oh, I got a real... Well, once I learned that Robert Gibbs had been a hatchet man against Howard Dean...
Yeah,
I was all done with Robert Gibbs.
I was like, ew, is that what you're about? Yeah, so... He just sort of...
When, in fact, it was Howard Dean's 50-state strategy that got the presidency.
He's from your place, ain't he? From Alabama?
Well, he's a Barner. He's from Auburn.
Oh, and that means what in the...
Well, I went to Alabama.
Oh, God, I'm going to go wash my mouth out.
Yeah, you just be careful, Sandra. The entire state of Alabama is quivering right now.
Well, listen, Alabama, didn't they lose? They lost one, ain't they done?
No, they've lost 2, and yeah, they're done.
Oh, they lost. See, I've been out of it. I haven't had time to...
Yeah, the old ball coach Steve Spurrier opened up a can of whoop ass on him.
I know that one.
And then just this past Saturday,
LSU.
That's
a freaky coach at LSU. He's trying to pull one off, huh?
Oh yeah. And Alabama is stick a fork in him done.
Okay, yeah, they done. But you know what? I see Randy Moss has popped up again. What's up with that?
Yeah, down Tennessee way.
Yes.
Yeah, the only thing I can figure is that Randy did just fine under, granted, Bill Belichick's a hoodie-wearing Nazi.
Yeah, not only that, but he doesn't Jedi mind. He probably had that fool under wraps.
Yeah, and if there's anybody else in the NFL who has a remote chance of being able to work with Randy Moss, it's probably Jeff Fisher at Tennessee.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tennessee needed a deep threat.
No, that's true. And Fisher seemed to be a bit of a hard ass. But on the other hand, back to the nightmare called the Vikings. When did they fire that fool?
I don't know. I'm just trying to keep odds running between him and the dude from Denver. Because those are two dead coaches walking.
No, he is so disgusting. So I can't stand that guy from Denver. It couldn't be happening to a nicer guy. He's so cocky and cocksure. Look at him now. Where's his ugly Tim Tebow? He's throw that bitch out there.
Well, that's all I wonder is, does the guy from Denver get to take little Timmy Jebo and his haircut with him?
And I see that that freak down in Florida, he ain't having a very nice time either, is he? He should have stayed retired.
Bad time, you know, it's all Dennis Hopper. Bad things, man, bad things.
Well, anyway, listen, I don't have nothing else. You know, it's
I understand.
No, the Indonesia thing is like sort of wrecked me. That whole spectacle is just like, yikes.
Jihad is a way to settle our differences.
You can spice that up in so many ways.
And the thing is, you know, like I said, I take no joy in it. I just know how the right-wing mind works.
No, but I don't care if jihad has 100 different meanings. Keep it out your mouth.
Yeah, well, you know, David in Tennessee told me a minute ago, he said, yeah, Barack Obama needs to be on a 2-minute tape delay on every effing word. That's why your Jesus Barack guy screams, cut, Start that one over, Barack, and read from the cards, damn it!
Yeah, at this point, it's really deteriorating for dude. And meanwhile, you got that Bush popping up everywhere. I wanted to shoot myself looking at that fool. For real?
Yeah, let's see. What we got in the cupboard here, Ma? We got a jar of peaches, some jars of green meat. Oh, look, it's a jar of baby.
And you were suggesting that that's some made-up shit, right?
Oh, I think he stole the story. That's a straight-up steal from Rick Santorum.
Yeah, no, and I can't even stand his face looks to be like it's about twice the diameter I remember it being.
And he went on Oprah today.
No way.
Way.
Oh, she's trying to play down her Levy rumor, so I guess that's a good one to do. Put Bush on, and they won't pop it.
Just as long as I get to watch.
That's exactly. Put that freak on. Oh, wait a minute. He was known as that. Remember that three-way story?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, this is another moment where we can reference being there. I like to watch.
Oh shit! But his face is doing my head in. It's like, no, go away.
Oh, and it won't be too long before the little children will say, Mommy, look at the nose on him. Now, be respectful, son. You'd like to have a nose like that full of nickels, wouldn't you?
Oh, he really trying to sell that book, though, huh?
Decision pants.
Anyway, okay, listen, I'm glad the phones are back working.
So am I, Sandra. You have no idea.
Okay, have a good evening.
You too. Bye now.
Bye.
Oh, like I said, it gives me no joy. This is the laughter that you laugh to keep from crying. Barack, cut! Start that one over, Barack, and read from the cards this time. Whew! Mother. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, wow. It's Ange, Frank and Angel.
Oh, hey, Ange. How you doing, dear?
I'm good. Well, I've been really sick for the past 3 weeks.
Ouch.
Feeling better.
Getting better, good.
Yeah, and it seems like every time I call in, I wait and wait and wait, and I never get in. But, yeah, I've been thinking a lot about, well, when I heard Sandra last week, and, you know, how everybody's talking about Obama, saying what's wrong with him. And Sanders said something about he acts like he has a battered wife syndrome.
that element is there. It's impossible to sort of miss.
Okay, I'm kind of going somewhere with this.
Okay.
I usually don't call in and I have a lot of time, but, okay. Have you ever thought that there's a lot more going on than we actually know?
All the time. The one place I cut him slack is
his head saying, if you do this, your family. I mean, I'm not saying it's true, but I have a wild imagination. And, you know, throughout history, I mean, people have killed innocent people and said that they were this and they were that, and you never know what's really going on.
No. I need to have this stuff closer to hand, Ange, but there's a great old clip from Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, in which he says that
Bill Hicks.
Yeah, in which he says that upon his inauguration, every new president is taken into a darkened room and shown the JFK assassination. And after a couple of minutes, and after a couple of minutes, the guy looks up and goes, wait a minute. This isn't the Zapruder film. This is a totally different angle. And the CIA handler with him says, precisely our point. And then the new president says, where do I sign?
It's actually given me the chills up and down my spine. Because, you know, JFK, he wasn't going to back down. He wanted to help people. And it seems like everybody that has backed down. And, you know,
I would love to know that I had that as a real working excuse for President Obama.
But it makes me wonder, and I've thought about it for a long time, and, you know, I still think about it. You know, and I watched this movie about 3 or 4 months ago, and this, it might be totally offbeat, but, you know, that it made me think about what's really true in history and what really went on. I watched this movie, and it was called Bathory, about Countess Elizabeth Bathory from Hungary,
mm-hmm.
that was known as the Blood Countess that bathed in young girls' blood and blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
whatever. Okay, but it gives you a whole other point, and actually, it makes you think. You know, this movie, this woman, her husband dies, and she owns tons of land, and she's very smart. She, like, you know, reads and writes in 4 languages, and she's totally like a woman's right sort of person. She's very smart. But all these men don't like it, and they want her power and her land and everything. And she has, well, in the movie, she has like a sort of a pagan spirit guide witch sort of thing that, woman that, you know, gives her all these potions and this and that. But anyway, these men saw her bathing in this like red bath, but it wasn't blood. It was like potions and all this stuff. But they got this idea and they started killing all these women. And then they hooked it on her so they could get rid of her because they wanted her power because they didn't like what she was doing. You know, it really makes you think. And back then, when they found the dead women, they didn't have all the scientific, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stuff to, you know, but, you know, only a few people have, but it makes you really wonder what has really gone on through history that was never told or nothing was the truth. And it makes me think, you know, from this day and age and our generation, what's going to be told, you know, 100 years from now. It's really very disturbing. And if watch that, and if you can get it, I watched it online on Mega Video. It's called Bathory, and it's a pretty cool movie, and it really stirred a lot of things up in me. It kind of made me angry. You know, because back then in the late 1500s and the early 1600s, you know, women weren't really, you know, unless they have power. But then even when they had power, men didn't.
Oh, no. Anytime in reasonably ancient history all the way up to fairly modern, well, modern history.
Yeah, fairly modern.
Anytime that there is a woman who acts independently, lives independently, and is not dependent upon some male, you may rest assured that there will be some sort of lascivious rumors started about her. It happened in ancient Greece. It happened in ancient Rome. It happened in the Middle Ages. It happened in the Renaissance, and it happens, as you note, and to this
right
day.
Now.
Yeah,
it happens to this day. You know, I've never been married. Don't have kids, and you know, people look at me kind of weird, and I'm not even in. Like women that are married with kids, I can't be in their group. It's not that I haven't tried, you know, but I can't be in their group. They look at me differently.
As if, right, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like it's my choice. Oh, I haven't found a man that I wanted to marry and spend the rest of my life with, you know. I haven't had kids because I haven't been married, and I can't afford a kid. I can barely afford myself. I mean, I'm sensible. I'm logical. You know.
You may said to be acting a lot more rationally than a lot of people on the planet.
Yeah, and you know, and I get looked at as crazy, and especially around here. I mean, I meet people that I think are cool, and then I find out they're in the Tea Party. And I, you know, I'm not like forceful, but I give them a little spiel, like, you know, that, you know, the corporate companies are supporting the Tea Party, and it's all just a big sham, and they're trying to fool you.
It's a patriotic movement based on getting our country back and restoring our constitution.
Yeah, that's just a conspiracy theory. That's not true. And I'm like, okay, just wait several years from now, and then you'll look back and wish you listened to me. You know?
I mean, what can I say? I don't want to, because they're all around me, Bob.
I know.
They're
and,
all
and,
around
well,
and,
me. You know,
the complex I live in.
And
I live.
You're one of the
foreign people. You know, I've had tons of Muslim friends from Iran, Pakistan, and I dig them more than I.
You're more comfortable with them than you are with the Clampets. Yes.
And you know, they're just like me. They just want to have peace, and I respect, you know, and they don't shove their religion down. I don't.
Well, just remember, Granny and Jethro came from Arkansas, Ange. They did.
And I just feel like.
Well, no, you're one of those people that I'm talking about, Ange. When I refer for folks outside the South, when I refer to the heroic liberals that are behind the cornbread curtain, you know, whether it's you or David in Tennessee or Luke in Tennessee or David in South Carolina or Matt in Alabama or Jack in Louisiana Ron in North Carolina. It goes on and on and on. It is not easy to be liberal in the South.
It is not. It really isn't. And another thing, you know, you talk about all the coal plants causing lung cancer and this and that. Well, I just found out something not too long ago here in Arkansas. There's something called, and I might be pronouncing it wrong, but it's called heptoplasmosis.
Yes. No, you're pronouncing it right.
It's a lung fungus. You know where it's caused from? Chicken.
Yeah.
Chicken poop. And, you know, there's tons in Northwest Arkansas and the home of Tyson and there's Simmons. And
yeah, histoplasmosis.
Around here. And it gets in the air, especially when it's windy. And then they use all the shit for fertilizer, too, around. And, you know, I haven't got really detected for it. But when I found out about it, it's like as soon as I moved to Arkansas, I kept getting, like, sick with allergies and respiratory stuff almost every year. And that's the only thing I can think of. But it's a lung fungus. And I know someone that actually went when I found out a couple months ago, and they never smoked. They never had any breathing problems or anything, but they were getting tested for a major surgery. And there was a spot in their lung. And they found out that's what it was.
Ange, I have it. Ange, I have it.
Okay. And it can be, you could be fine. Some people don't have any symptoms. And I'm like, I'm thinking, shit, is this what I have?
At some point you get disgustingly sick, and then you get well. The way I found out about it, I had a routine chest X-ray as part of an ER visit many, many years ago, and little doctor comes walking in and he says, "Oh, Bob, you're gonna die." This would have been January of 1996. He goes, "Oh, yeah, your lungs, they covered up. Well, you're going to die."
Doctors don't know crap.
And so he brings me in, and he shows me the X-ray, and there are all these little things inside my lungs. He's like, "Oh, it's spread all over you. You're dead." I'm not kidding. He's telling me. These are his words.
Doctors.
And so I'm sitting there. I had been carried in because my blood pressure had shot through the roof. And he's sitting there telling me this stuff, and I'm going,
and you're freaking out.
Oh, I was bugging out. And so a little bit later, they sent me through, and they did an MRI on my chest, and the next doctor looks at me and goes, no. And he starts running through this list of things with me. You ever gone caving? Yeah. You ever gardened? Yeah.
I've been caving.
You ever done this? Yeah. And he goes, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, no, that's histoplasmosis. Get a chest X-ray every year just to make sure that they're not getting any bigger.
Yeah, and you can be okay, but then you can get cancer from it, you know. And
I try not to think about that part.
It pisses me off when they're not taxing these big corporations. I mean, because in Northwest Arkansas, it's like they call it Chickendale here. I mean, it's Chickendale.
And because there's Tyson's, there's Simmons, there's all, and then all these outlying little places around. And I don't really got sick when it was really windy about 2.5 weeks. I mean, I got sick. I could hardly even breathe. I had phlegm and I was about to get pneumonia and I finally went to the doctor. I hate to go to the doctor because my health insurance is like a $2,000 deductible and it's already towards the end of the year. And every time I go to the freaking doctor around here, I go to the doctor, I spend $100 and some dollars, they don't tell me shit, and then they recommend me 3 other doctors that I have to spend $200 more on each. It's like a mob ring. And when I...
Well, that's what it's supposed to be like, Ange.
I didn't have that problem because I had the same doctor since I was born. That actually, it was very rare that he sent me to another doctor. And I was always healthy. I never had problems, you know, other than, you know, a couple of, you know, athletic injuries and you know, this and that. But it's like, I just can't figure it out. It's like, I'm better off searching on the internet and figuring out what's wrong with me myself.
Tinnitus. Oh my God, that's just awful.
My ears have been ringing since 2006, and I am diagnosed as I could go deaf, have some neural hearing loss, and it was all from a series of medications that the doctor gave me. I was up for 4 days in 2006. I was up for 4 days. I thought I was hallucinating. I couldn't sleep. My ears started ringing, and I did all this research. I even talked to, I can't remember his name, but I talked to a doctor that was a northern doctor, and he had a book called Ototoxic Drugs. And I wrote to him describing all my medications, and he said every one of those medications are ototoxic drugs. And I went back to the doctor and told him he referred me to another doctor. And then when I told him and I gave him like 20 pages of printout, he didn't even want to look at it. He looked at me, he told me, no, that's not right. And you know why? Because they don't want a lawsuit. And I never sued or anything for it because I was told it's going to cost me more money than I have, which I don't have much. And it would put more stress and mental, you know, so I just let it go. But from then on, since 2006, I don't go to the doctor. I don't trust the doctors. Because this is a big money scam. And my stomach still hurts.
Well, no, the problem, Ange, is it's not so much that the docs are a scam, it's that the insurance is a scam. And what's more, the docs aren't taught what they need to know in a modern toxic environment. For instance, we've got, you know, I've got friends around here, people in parts of West Virginia, who went to doctor after doctor after doctor, all of whom scratched their heads and filled out the billing forms, until they finally began seeing somebody who actually had been meaningfully trained in the toxicity of industrial chemicals and heavy metals. And then suddenly it became abundantly clear why it was that their gallbladders were burning up, their livers were rotting, and their kidneys were fried, and their bowels were on fire. It was from coal toxins. You know, it does that. These things. Sandra Steingraber was on the program several months ago. Our good friend Preston helped set up that conversation. Not helped. He did set up that conversation. And it was a magnificent discussion of what living in a toxic world means to the human body. And one of the first questions you've got to answer, ask a doctor, if it's at all weird, is, do you know anything about toxic exposures? Have you had any training on it? Can you refer me to somebody? Because, it's like well water here in West Virginia, Ange. If you think, you know, my water's making me sick, and you go to the local health department, they will come and they will test for coliform bacteria and fungal agents. but they don't test for heavy metals because they don't want to know that the heavy metals are there, because that in turn becomes a blatant indictment of the industry that owns this state lock, stock, and stinking coffin.
Mercury.
Mercury, selenium, cadmium, barium, beryllium, arsenic, on and on and on and on. And, you know, you've got coal-fired power plants in your state. That stuff...
Oh, yeah. There's one that my sister, I have three sisters, one of my sisters lived probably like a couple miles from her. And, you know, I have sent her stuff on it, and she has no interest at all. She thinks I'm freaking crazy, and she has a little boy that's in grade school. No one...
Well, maybe she wakes up, Ange, when you explain to her... When you explain to her, Ange, that because of coal toxins, that her little precious four-year-old boy has a 10-point IQ deficit.
The thing is, he's really smart.
Yeah, but he'd be smarter.
He's had a lot of problems as far as... What do you call it when you're a little rebel and you kick your teacher? And, I don't know. Temperament problems.
Behavioral disorders?
Behavioral disorders. But he's really smart. He's like in first grade, but he can read. And he has thought patterns that are almost like an adult. But, you know, my point is no one... cares. You tell them something that's factual, and they think, "Oh, that's just some conspiracy theory on the internet."
But Angie, it's a fact. This much is a fact, Angie. It is sad but true. But doctors spend more time listening to drug reps from the pharmaceutical companies than to any other source of information they have.
Yeah,
Ange, it's a back and forth, honey. I talk, then you talk, okay?
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's all right. But what I'm trying to get across to you and to everybody listening is that the drug rep who gets paid to sell his magic potions is the single most paid attention to source of information on those potions. And all the doctor comes away with is, "Hey, you, over there, my patient, open wide."
I know, it's a mob ring. It's a mob ring, is what I'm telling you. And you know... And I've experienced it for years. It's really scary.
And the only hope,
we're screwed, Bob.
Lots of people do. But the thing is, we are only screwed if we choose to remain ignorant. Once you have awakened into the nightmare, then the life-changing stuff begins to happen. And I'm not trying to sound like some sort of guru.
I agree with you. But a lot of these people, it's going to be years and years and years before they wake up to that nightmare. When it's almost too late. You know? And they don't, I mean, right now, they that's just a conspiracy theory. You can't read everything you see on the Internet or hear on the Internet. And I'm thinking... These dummies think Fox News is more true than anything else.
And there's just not a hell of a lot you can do for those people.
There's a ton of them, Bob. I mean, it's so ridiculous, it's not even funny. That's why I think we're all screwed, because none of these people are ever going to wake up until it's too late.
Well, but that too late has a rather dramatic cutoff point, Ange.
Yeah, I know. I hope I'm not around when it happens.
Well, no, we're all around when it happens. That's the thing. The title of Jim, the great seminal biography of Jim Morrison of The Doors. The title of that book.
I loved it.
The title of that book is No One Here Gets Out Alive.
Yeah, I read one called Into the Fire.
Yeah, but No One Here Gets Out Alive. It's the point is the title. No One Here Gets Out Alive. Something's going to get you. In many ways, it's the human story is the story of what we manage to avoid and what we neglect that finally wipes us out. And in a way,
yeah,
the story of humanity in the 21st century is what will we let wipe us out. There was a story that came out of Argentina that was just horrifying. A guy, a scientist, you know, real live, honest-to-goodness scientist, had done a bunch of research on Monsanto's Roundup. You know what Roundup is, I'm sure. It's a,
oh, yeah, I heard about that. Yeah, and I read about
and
that.
So,
yeah.
And so the guy, the Argentine scientist, was going to present his findings at a meeting in Argentina. He'd already been published to one degree or another in the United States. And before he could get to the place where he was going to deliver his findings, he was met by a lynch mob. And thanks to the fine folks at Monsanto, he was silenced.
See, that's just the thing.
Because Monsanto...
History doesn't have a chance.
Yeah, Monsanto are thugs. Monsanto are thugs.
Just like all
and
the
they would rather, and they would
throughout the hundreds of years. I mean...
You know, they would literally rather... They would rather kill... they would rather kill innocent humans than have anyone interfere with their profit margin. This is another story over at one of my favorite sites, truthout.org. The headline is War Over Monsanto Gets Ugly. And these Roundup revelations are really quite frightening, because Dr. Andres Carrasco had been engaged in a study, and he had linked Roundup to rising birth defects in the agricultural areas of Argentina.
Yeah, and it's causing all this super weeds and all this other stuff that they're doing with the Roundup genetically in the seeds and shit.
The mob that stopped Dr. Carrasco was organized by local officials and agribusiness bosses. Agribusiness bosses, that means Monsanto. One of the people that was attacked by the mob was struck so hard in the spine that the person has suffered lower body paralysis. Another person was treated for blows to the head. The corporatists will kill, Ange. They will kill.
And when will people realize what is going on? It doesn't take, and I never considered myself, that smart compared to other people that can, like you, that, I don't know, just can talk, and I never could memorize stuff that well, but I have a deep sense of knowing. And maybe it's because I'm an artist and I can look at the sky and see things, and I don't know what it is, but I don't think a lot of people think like us. I don't think most people see the world.
No, it's not, Ange, that they don't think like us. Most people don't think.
I don't know. I think so much sometimes, Bob, that I just want to die because I can't stand all the stuff that's going on in the world.
Never give up.
And you know, people tell me, they're like, why do you even do the, you know, read this stuff and find out this stuff? It upsets you so much. And I say, well, it upsets me that no one else cares.
Yeah, it's not the knowledge that's bothering you. It's the apathy.
You know, I just can't understand. It's like, I don't know. I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. Don't apologize, Ange. Don't apologize for being human, honey.
And sometimes I am recluse, and I don't do the computer thing as much as I used to, and I don't
come out there is because sometimes the world just is too much for me. And if I can, you know, be here and with my cat and think good thoughts, you know, but I still, you know, go out and read all the stuff, and but it upsets me. I just don't talk about it as much. You know, it's because I'm already viewed as a freaking crazy person to my family, and, you know.
Well, you're not crazy to us.
And my job is because I'm really good at it.
Well, just remember, Ange, remember that old saying. It's not an old saying. Gertrude Stein said it. She said, friends are the family we pick for ourselves. And you are a part of the Horn family. And you have friends.
The Horn family is the only people I actually can even relate with in the whole world.
Well, they're all waiting for you in the chat room, honey.
And, you know, I love them all. And sometimes I want to say I'm agoraphobic when you're scared of walking outside. Sometimes I'm scared to get on the internet because I always get slammed by it. But in the Horn chat room, it's always cool.
Well, if you've got a minute, wander over. I didn't mean to upset you like I did. I'm so sorry.
No, you didn't upset. I upset myself for thinking about, you know, the world, all the people around me, as far as in real life. You know, the people, my family, and people I work with and stuff, and, you know, it's like they don't respect what I think or feel, you know, and they think I'm crazy. They think I'm a conspiracy.
Well, they don't respect. But understand, Ange.
They're so ignorant.
Ange, please understand something. The reason that they have to so vociferously oppose what you have to say, the reason they have to put it down, the reason they have to shout you down, is because there is a thin, terrifying possibility that if they let you get through, they might have to examine their lives. And if they examine their lives, then their little Leave It to Beaver worlds are going to collapse. And they're not suited to live in that world. We've got a lot of our fellow citizens in this country, Ange, who are hothouse flowers. They are hothouse flowers. That means they can't live on their own in the wild. And we are in the wild, Ange. No, we're not out there plowing the South 40 or anything for our food. We are actually in a more fragile, more precarious position than the earliest hunter-gatherers that ever existed on this planet. We are utterly without the means to control anything that happens in our lives, absent our ability to be awake in the nightmare and to be cognizant of our own surroundings and our own circumstances. Most American households, whether they vote Republican or Democrat, are 2 weeks away from absolute ruin.
Oh, yeah. Because they live far beyond their means.
Well, even if they're living within their means, they're still 2 weeks away from absolute ruin because that is the way the system is designed to keep them. This is economics that goes back to the dead, stinking, rotten, filthy hand of Milton Friedman, who said the way you run business and the way you make the economic engine run in the world is by grinding the working class into dust and making them live in fear. And the only way to offset that fear, for many people, is to lose themselves in who's dancing with a roller skater. It's the only way. Because if they didn't lose themselves in who wants to marry a millionaire's plastic surgeon's nose, or being told that the problem in America is those people on Radio Rwanda, if they don't do that, then they have to engage in critical thinking about their existence. And when they start doing that and the scales start falling from their eyes, it's a very terrifying place, as you know. And the only hope we have, the only hope we have against the terror is ourselves banded together and refusing to be played by the fear machine and the filth monsters.
Yeah, it's like they're scared to, you know, when you're a kid, and, you know, I was raised, there was a Santa Claus. And when you realize there's not a Santa Claus, there's not a Tooth Fairy, there's not an Easter Bunny, it's like, but now I'm older, and, you know, it's been decades, you know, since I've believed in that stuff. But then, you know, when you wake up to another realization that the rest of the world don't. When the facts are there.
Well, you know, the truth of the matter is, Ange, you know? As a child, I was more upset when I found out that King Arthur was a myth than when I found out about Santa Claus. Because King Arthur represents... King Arthur, you know, the Arthurian myth represented a commitment to the absolute nexus between mercy and justice and goodness and decency. And a world where evil was clearly delineated as opposed to its polar opposite good. And that was hard. That was really hard. Ange, I really appreciate the time you spent with us this evening. Thank you so much. And, you know, just remember that the Horn family is here. We're here. Take care, dear.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to the next callers, and I'm glad I got to talk a little bit longer than I usually do.
Well, you got in earlier, so yeah,
you know,
good deal.
Yeah.
And you have a good night, dear.
I love you and Agnes and everybody in the Horn family.
As we do you.
I mean,
as we do you.
You are my. I think about you even though I'm not there.
Thank you. Thank you, Ange. You take care. Bye now. Ange calling from behind the Razorback Curtain in Arkansas. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, sir.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
Oh, okay, I guess. Right now I'm watching the beginning of Dr. Strangelove.
What a magnificent film. I saw that it was on this evening. Unfortunately, I don't get it on my cable system. Plus, I'm going to be kind of tied up tonight anyway.
I believe you are, as you have been earlier in the evening. Well, there are a couple things I'd like to say, if you don't mind.
Go right ahead.
Number one, it's very difficult to practice medicine over the telephone. Number two, medicine is an art and a science, and what you're going to hear from one person, you may hear from another. And let's just face it, you hope that somebody will be able to get it right.
Yeah.
And that's just about it.
There are fundamental flaws in the teaching and training system, though, that develop for reasons beyond the best interests of the patient, shall we say.
Well, yes, that's true. And I think that is becoming more and more apparent, as we have discussed earlier, with the practice of the medical profession.
Oh, when doctors are rewarded with trips to exotic vacation locales in exchange for the number of times they prescribe the latest chemical compound, that's just wrong.
Talked about that, Bob. We talked about how the pharmaceutical companies experiment on people and how they use this, that, and the other, and it's a hit and miss type thing. And with the advent of each pharmaceutical preparation, you have very serious contraindications. It almost makes it worse than the disease is supposed to cure, you know?
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. But, you know, going back to some earlier things that we were talking about during the first opening moments of your program about war crimes and things of that nature, I was just thinking, first, number one, war criminals have been used for many purposes. They've been used to expiate senses of morality and justice. And then, of course, you have their use for other purposes. For example, the father of our modern space program, Dr. Wernher von Braun, was directly responsible. He and Colonel Walter Dornberger were involved in slave labor. They produced weapons of mass destruction.
They rained death on innocent civilian populations in England.
Please let me finish.
Yes.
They rained death upon London. And what is the first thing we did? We captured him and got him and a whole bunch of his fellow cohorts who were working at Peenemunde, and then at this horrible place when, after Peenemunde was born, was bombed, to Huntsville, Alabama.
I know it well.
Reinhard Highland, for example, Galen, Reinhard Galen, who was German, he was quite involved in the atrocities of the Eastern Front situation. The U.S. Army took him in because it needed him to deal with Stalin and people like that. Klaus Barbie. He worked for the certain agencies of our government that I'm not going to even mention. So, I mean, we've taken a number of these people who have been guilty of a lot of terrible things, and we've used them for our own advantage. And this is inherent throughout our history. And this cannot be disputed. It is there. Even Pastor Neumiller, God bless him, before he had a change of heart, was a German U-boat ace and sent many a man to Davy Jones' locker.
Yes, he was.
And he did have a change of heart when it came to Adolf Hitler and he saw what Hitler was doing to his country. Luckily, there are people who do have changes of heart and are capable of saying. And I just wanted to mention these things from a viewpoint of historical perspective. You know, I just wish today that we had a man, and you were talking about President Kennedy earlier, and I realize we're sort of being very desultory here, and we have to be for a length of time, of the purpose of time and situation here. I just wish that we had a man of President Kennedy's stature today instead of one like Barack Obama, who seems to listen to no one except, I don't know, whomever. Maybe he has some type of Deus Ex Machina who comes and descends from the roof of the Oval Office and tells him what to do and say. I don't understand.
No, I don't think it's that dramatic. You have to remember that many of the things that we criticize the Bush administration for, you remember Dick Cheney's Secret Energy Task Force?
Yes, sir, I do.
Well, at the beginning of the debate over health care, who came in and had a sit-down, come-to-Jesus moment with Barack Obama, but the pharmaceutical industry and the healthcare industry? Trust me, they didn't get beans and Kool-Aid. They got all the time they needed. You know, to the Obama administration's credit, they released the fact that that happened. They admitted it. But admitting it isn't always sufficient expiation.
Well, I can't blame him for listening to these people. I mean, they are the experts in their field. They are the proponents of their professions. And, you know, I can see no problem with him listening to them and to listen to their positions and their opinions and things of that nature.
No, it's listening to them exclusive to the needs of the American people.
Barack Obama is not a physician. He's a politician. And as a politician, when he's not kissing babies, he's stealing their lollipops. And in this particular case, he's not doing either very well, in my opinion.
I think that's the crux of the matter, Jim. That he's not doing it very well part.
No, he's not doing it very well.
You know, remember during the health care debate that while the health care industry and the pharmaceutical industry were having a nice sit-down meeting with the president, the doctors in favor of the public option were arrested and hauled out of Senate hearing rooms simply for being there.
Well,
you know, there's...
That was indeed a grievous error if these men were not allowed to speak and not to be heard.
And what we're describing with a lot of these functionaries... These, you know, get up and go to work every day and never mind the consequences of what we're doing. We're talking about the people who Hannah Arendt was talking about.
I beg your pardon?
Hannah Arendt. You know that phrase, the banality of evil?
Oh, yes.
You know, you don't have to be looking like the Frankenstein monster or Count Dracula to manifest evil, and we've discussed that as well. You don't have to have the spiffy uniforms. Sometimes it can. Sometimes evil can show up in a pair of khakis and a cardigan.
Evil takes many forms, Bob. You know that, and I know that. I tell you, today I spent, of all things, addressing Christmas cards. And in each card, I wrote this, and I wanted to share it with you. And it may not be germane to what we've been talking about tonight, but nonetheless, I wanted to share it with you, if you don't mind.
Go right ahead.
A Japanese radiologist attending the sick and dying at the medical treatment facility in Hiroshima in September of 1945 was asked by an American counterpart how could he stand the surrounding horror and destruction. The reply was given in the format of a traditional haiku. Quote, "Once your house is burned down, you can see the moon more clearly," end quote. A tribute to one man's ability to endure the unendurable with a modicum of aplomb, dignity, grace, and hope. Pursuant to this end, President John F. Kennedy once said, quote, "For in the final analysis, our most basic link is that we all inhabit this small planet. We all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's future. And we all are mortal," end quote. Ending this thing, I said, or wrote, "There is no sickness like hatred, no gift like health, no bomb like compassion, no resolution without tolerance and understanding, no joy like peace, no spark of divinity without contrition and forgiveness, and no earthly treasure greater than the peace of mind that defies and passes all human understanding."
The people on your Christmas card list are fortunate people indeed. And moreover, Jim, I applaud you for getting an early start on it as well. You're miles ahead of me.
You never know, Bob. You never know if you're not going to be there to send them. And I've been in that position in my life and am in it now. But nonetheless, there we are, and there it is. And as far as government is concerned, what can I say? I can't say anything about the government or its agencies, and I'm not really able to do so. Wherever there is greatness, there is power. And wherever there is power, there is error and the capability of great error.
Indeed, that is true.
And on that note, I'm going to leave you to your next guest. I hope you have a good show, and I thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you, Jim. You have a good evening.
Good night.
Bye now. Let those words stand on their own. Hey, welcome to the program.
Let's take a moment for something funny. Holy cow.
Pretty heavy.
Yep, it's a heavy evening. I found a book that we all must read from a teabagger library called, and I'm not making this title up, people, "Whiny Little Bitch, The Excuse-Filled Presidency of Barack Obama."
Oh, sweet Jesus.
And here is just a simple paragraph excerpt. "Congressional Democrats view tax cuts with the same enthusiasm as a vampire viewing a crucifix. Come to think of it, congressional Democrats view a crucifix with the same enthusiasm as a vampire viewing a crucifix. Obama blaming Wall Street for the financial meltdown is like showing up for the last 5 minutes of Star Wars and deciding that Skywalker kid should go to jail for murdering all those nice folks on the Death Star."
Oh.
Yeah, who ghostwrote that? Dennis Miller? I mean, come on.
You know, it does kind of bear his mark, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Just a little bit. I can't say a teabagger Dennis Miller because he's a full-blown teabagger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I did want to make a note of what you were talking about, the the assassination with Al-Awlaki, and I wanted to bookend that with the Oscar Grant verdict, which nobody's really talked about because they didn't let media or mobile app devices. But I don't know if you heard about any of the details of the case. Davey D was tweeting, and for those people who don't know, Davey D is like a hip hop scholar, journalist, activist. Been doing it for like over 20 years, incredible work. Anyways, he was getting information from the family, and I don't know if you heard the verdict, Bob, but Marcel got 2 years for killing Oscar Grant. And the judge actually said, now this is where it gets disgusting, people. The judge actually had the nerve to blame Oscar Grant, and that's when the family walked out of the courtroom.
Oh, blame the victim always plays well.
And here's the funny thing. He doubled Marcel's 146 days served, so he'll be eligible for release within a year. Sickening to think about. And to parallel that with something, we have a case of a hacker who's getting more time than shooting someone in the back for hacking O'Reilly and Ann Coulter sites. So you try to figure that one out, people.
I'm no help.
That's the problem, Bob. We are facing right now.
But this is that multi-level justice system that Sandra was talking about earlier, Dave.
Yeah, I know.
To take you back for a minute.
Injustice system.
Yeah, an injustice system. Right.
Yeah.
The young man who raped the cheerleader in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
He was sentenced to 2 years probation, $2,500 fine, 150 hours of community service, and he has to attend an anger management course.
Mm.
He will always have a conviction of assault on his record, but it will not be sexual assault, so he doesn't have to register as a sex offender. That story is so wrong from so many different directions. I don't know quite how to approach it. What the hell was wrong with the school board?
All of these cases they tie together, and it points to a more ominous sign than we could have ever imagined. And I mean, we're gonna see cases like this over and over again, and not until we have somebody who actually takes a moment to reflect on these cases like we're doing, and hopefully someday we'll get a moment where we can talk about this in the open. But I'm not holding my breath on that, and that's part of the problem, Bob. I mean, when I saw one of the reasons why I brought up the whole Oscar Grant issue was because what was the big hoo-ha during the week? It was Oberman. It was Oberman getting kicked out, and to me, when I actually listened to a program about the trial and the verdict, and listened to the family, and the mother not even wanting to talk to the phone, even though she agreed to be on the phone, she said, and they had to get the uncle to talk on the phone, and they talked about it. And there's one instance where Davey D said that allegedly the judge said in passing, he said, "Well, at least you have Obama."
What?
I mean, see, that's the blatant racism we face in this country, day after day, rather hour after hour. And while we're talking, Bob, today was Mumia Jamal's new hearing for his execution, and they want to get this guy fried quick.
Have you seen any results?
I think they're still holding the hearing. This is what they always do with him. They want to keep him alive just long enough before, you know, there's this where they need him the most, and then they can say, we killed the killer for you. Kind of like political capital. They keep him alive. I mean, for people who who have feelings about Mumia Jamal regarding the court case and think that he got a fair trial, and it's not even close to a fair trial. And you know, here's a guy, Bob, who every week, people, he does a commentary using a prison radio phone, and he records it just like he was on NPR, and it sounds just like he was on NPR, and he counts it off, and every 5 minutes you have, this is a prison phone, and it has that recorded voice, but somehow he's been able to make the technology work, and it makes you think how many people we just leave in the dirt, or we leave them behind, or they're just forgotten of all of these talented people. Who have limited tools and stuff, who could just use a little bit of exposure and spotlight, and that's part of the problem with the whole the left movement and the progressive, like you said, the not to go back into what you were talking about, the infrastructure, but it goes back into that, because when the Oscar Grant verdict was, when they were talking about it, when Davey D was talking about it on Twitter, I thought it was to me, that was one of the things that a lot of people should have talked about a little bit more, and tried to get the families voiced out, because, I mean, here is a family that was, obviously they knew that their son was not going to get the justice he deserved right from the get-go, but the fact that, you know, they said that the trial was a big sham and the judge was so disrespectful and they didn't allow any devices for recording, no reporters. And here we are with the whole. I thought it was rather. It's a rather ominous sign when everyone was talking about bring Oberman back, and it was obvious he was going to be back, but there wasn't that much information on the whole Oscar Grant thing, and it made me.
I don't want to piss anybody off, David, but the fact of the matter is, when you're dealing with things at the level of. Multi-million person audiences, really that old saw kicks in with a vengeance. There is no such thing as bad publicity. It's
yeah.
The truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was a net good for Countdown.
Yeah.
The story was all over the place. Liberals were fired up. How is it? And it's great. And the you know the company can go to the advertiser and say, hey, look how many people are really they care about this program. You want your messaging here. This is a good marketing dollar.
Yeah,
that's a great dollar. Mm-hmm. That angry liberal. That angry liberal dollar is a good dollar.
The other thing I wanted to mention was, did you catch any of the Lawrence O'Donnell and Glenn Greenwald brouhaha?
Oh yeah, I did. About I'm a socialist.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now the Beckerhead is trying to get O'Donnell killed.
I guess you could put it that way.
See, I told you they're all socialist, communist, fascist, Muslim. Kill them.
But before I go, I do want to take your bet on Jeb Bush being president. I think the signs are written in the sand that Jeb Bush is going to get moved to the side and it's going to be Bloomberg.
I'll take that. I will take that.
You'll take that?
I'll take that.
Well, you know, Bob, I mean, if you look at Bloomberg's history and his background in business, you compare that with Bush's background. When after you have like an economic downturn, you know how Americans are. They're suckers for businessmen, and they're going to run right to Bloomberg.
Yeah, but no. There are two words that will sink Bloomberg with the Republican Party.
Uh-huh.
Former Democrat.
I think people are going to be surprised by his run. I was actually Nader was doing a debate with Tom Hartman, and he said he was talking behind the scenes with Bloomberg, and for some reason Nader, which is beyond me, he thinks Bloomberg is a true blue, no pun intended, independent, which to me means basically, you know my feelings on this, a Republican who's afraid to say that he's a
Republican.
Yeah, Republican.
Exactly. Oh, and by the way, Sandra just wrote in, David, to say that there were big clashes with the police in Oakland over the Grant verdict.
Yeah.
So
it's a disheartening to hear, but we have to keep talking about these stories of injustice and the fact that for some time, probably for as long as we are both alive, that these stories will never be resolved, and there will be no justice, but you just have to keep talking about it.
And that's keeping things in the forefront of people's consciousness is critically important, and I've got to work on doing a better job about that. In fact, I've been thinking a lot about that very issue, David.
Yeah.
And I think it would behoove me to actually discuss the whole thing at some length here in the fairly near future. David, I'm up against it because I'm knocking off a little early because I'm covering for Rick Smith tonight. But great conversation, my friend. Thanks for the update.
All right, bye.
Bye now. David from Maine, our pop culture correspondent. We'll try to get one more caller in, and then we'll hang it up for the night. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Megan.
Hey, Megan.
How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. How about you?
I'm all right. I'm getting in a bit late into the program because I'm getting back from my voice lesson. But did you happen to get my email today about Joe Manchin?
Yeah, I did.
I don't know if you did. You discuss that earlier in the program, or
well, what? I hadn't. Frankly, I don't really know much to say about it. The idea that this is a story that's largely being floated by Fox. That's where it started. That Joe Manchin is being courted to switch to the Republican Party. I don't see it happening. At least I don't see it happening anytime soon. If anything, he will use it to leverage more power and more solicitude from the Democrats in the Senate. The only way he will switch to be a Republican is once there is a Republican majority. And that won't happen until 2012 at the earliest.
Well, I mean, if what you say is correct, then all that's really changed is either the letter and the color. But
there are a few things where he might be counted on for a vote with the Democrats. It won't be anything having to do with climate change or the toxicity of carbon dioxide or the toxicity of anything emanating from the coal industry or the oil industry or Marcellus shale fracking in the gas industry. He can't be counted on as a vote for women's rights because he's a hardcore pro-lifer. He can't be counted on to vote to help save Social Security because he's a privatizer. He privatized our workers' comp system here in West Virginia. He can't be counted on as a vote for the Employee Free Choice Act. That last one, maybe, just maybe. But most of the things that matter to Democrats and especially to liberals, he can't be counted on as a vote for anyway. That's why I call him Blanche Manchin. Now that nasty old Blanche Lincoln is out of Arkansas, he is her almost carbon copy replacement, except he's got a lot better hair. So forevermore now, he is, for me, Senator Blanche Manchin of West Virginia.
I saw that, and I immediately sent it to you, and I was like, oh, jeez. How the hell can he be counted as a Democrat then?
Well, because he says he is. I mean, it's not like you've got to ride a goat or go through an initiation ceremony to be a Democrat. This is by no means a liberal state. Democrat, Robert Byrd was a Democrat here for a million years, but the Democrats here tend to be very, very, very troglodytically conservative, Megan.
Well, again, it goes back to that analogy. If you park yourself in a garage, does that mean you're automatically a Chevrolet?
Well, where the Democratic Party is concerned, apparently yes.
All right. I won't keep you long. I did want to give a shout-out to Ange, and if it was at all possible, to try and get in touch with her possibly through email, and because I did want to talk to her. I heard came in on the tail end of her phone call.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure what's going on, but I would.
No, I think like many of us, Ange just gets a little overwhelmed with it all from time to time.
Well, she's not alone, and I wanted to let her know that.
Okie doke. I appreciate it, Megan. It's that kind of outreach that makes what we're doing here at the Horn, to my way of thinking, so very, very special.
Yeah, and that's why I keep coming back.
Thank you, Megan. You have a wonderful evening, dear.
No problem, Bob. You too.
Bye now. Bye. And I wasn't trying to hurry Megan off, but I do have 3 more hours of radio to do here in about 23 minutes. So I'm going to knock off now and then rejoin me at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, just about 22 minutes from now, as I sit in for Rick Smith on the Rick Smith Show. He is behind the scrapple curtain up in Pennsylvania and does a magnificent job. I'm glad he was able to get a little bit of downtime to get away for some family values stuff. Thanks, everybody, and thanks to all of you who contribute to keep the Horn going. We are still trying to meet, well, we're not even halfway to November's fundraising goal by any stretch of the imagination. We're still looking for the input of what we hope will eventually be the thrifty 250, 250 people willing to contribute $10 a month, which works out to about 5 cents per hour of programming here on the Horn. A bargain, frankly, I think, and from what I can tell from y'all that you think as well. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. The snail mail address is also there if you wish to contribute that way. Thanks to everybody who contributes either way. It is genuinely appreciated because it allows us to continue for over 5 years now doing what you have come to value and have said on a number of occasions that you do value. Another exhortation to you, if you have not gone over to YouTube and subscribed to Horzak's channel, Horzac, Horzak, you're not going to be able to get all the clips that he puts up of the program. And well, gosh, they're awfully fun to collect. Collect all of them, and share them with your friends. It's a lot like liberal radio Pokemon, really. Go over Horzak, Horzac. Subscribe at YouTube.com. Friend up with me on Facebook and follow on Twitter. I don't turn anybody down that isn't offering to sell me or offer me dibs on a Nigerian will, or offering to sell me Swedish mattresses or bowling balls that can be picked up off of them with vacuum cleaners and buy gold now. Those are the only people that I turn away, and some of those get through, frankly. So thanks, everybody. I'm looking forward to doing the Rick Smith Show here in a few minutes, and I hope you will be there as well. We will continue conversation radio here starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I hope you'll join in if you weren't able to get on the program now. There's a different phone number. There's a different phone number, but I'll be giving that out. It's all right there on the Horn stream for you. You might have to reload your player in a little bit. Thanks to everybody that makes the program happen. Thanks to Lottie, our moderator in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. To Matt Osborne at Osborne Inc., who, something about Matt. I just said something off the cuff to him yesterday. I just typed to him in some sort of a chat. I said, the Bush family really is our national Stephen King novel. And Matt has the kind of mind that can't leave something like that alone. And as a consequence, if you go over to osborneinc.com, you will find a post there. And what a post it is. Looking for it now. Oh, yes. George's in Jars. George's in Jars. Go over to Osborne Inc., OSBORNEINK.com, and read George's in Jars. It's not factual. It is fiction. But it's based on that odd little quip that I have to be careful about making. I think you'll be horrified and hilarified at the same time. Our op-ed columnist is Reverbo at Cavalcade of Crazy, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. My head writer is David in Tennessee. John Fox is the integral engineering, web mastering, web designing, music suggesting, music playing, performing, composing, radio show hosting component of the horn, without whom I would be hopelessly lost. And all of this happens because of the good intentions and goodwill of Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, from whence flow all the live streams, the rerun streams, and the podcasting of horn programming. This all happens, of course, by virtue of the continued support from Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. They are, in fact, the hardest-working, bravest people I know. They're the ones on the front line of the fight for human rights in Appalachia. And I encourage you to go to CRMW.net and ColeRiverWind.org and learn all you possibly can. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! All right, everything works. After, and by the way, just so you'll know, yeah, after things went sideways last night, I think we got phones back about 9:30 or so. But I have double-checked both lines. They ring in just dandy, and everything should be dandy for tonight. A little announcement for tonight, though. This is one of those odd nights. I'm going to knock off at about 8:30 just to give myself a break to gather my wits, because at 9 p.m., I will be filling in for Rick Smith on The Rick Smith Show, which comes to you every night on the horn at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'll be filling in for Rick so that, he's not home yet. He's having some family values time. I think it's an anniversary or something like that. That's really wonderful that he can get away with Mrs. Rick. So stick around for that. We'll have, there's potentially 5.5 hours of conversation radio ahead of us tonight. I hope I will have a throat tomorrow. But no, we got everything sorted out. And you know, last night just chapped my butt because I was raring to go. I was loaded for bear. No, not loaded. Loaded for bear. I mean, and I could have filibobstered 3 hours. But as I said, that would have meant getting things fixed 3 hours later. And, well, frankly, the bottom line of this program is that it is not about me, it is about you. We are not constrained by the needs of commercial, corporate, the Buy Gold Now radio. Speaking of which, there's a Buy Gold story for you out there. It's just a quick one. But our good buddy over at Stop Beck tweeted this yesterday, and I felt like you just have to know about this. But we're not constrained by that kind of stuff, so it's just us. And for me to sit here and preach and lecture and pontificate for 3 hours is the height of vanity upon my part, and I don't have that kind of ego. I just don't. So if we can't talk, there's not a whole lot of, then what, you know, I might as well just make this a podcast and not even bother to do it live. So that's why we knocked off and fixed stuff. But everything works tonight, which is a beauty. Okay, let's get the Buy Gold Now story out of the way. Oh, wait. Wait, I had a note from, I had a note from Horst Bjorngobler. Bjorngobler. I don't know what to do with that damn umlaut. I know what to do when Egbert Soussé tells me there's an accent grave over the E. Umlauts, not so much. But, Horst dropped me a note today and said, "Hey, Bob, I checked my inbox this morning. I saw some new subscribers to the Clip channel on YouTube." That's Horzac at YouTube, H-O-R-Z-A-C, Horzac. Pretty much within minutes of each other. "I figured you must have said something on the show, and sure enough, just to let you know, it's having an effect, although it's still slow going at this stage. Don't get too excited, but we are literally one or two people away from having a dozen subscribers." I know. Calm down. Deep breath. Yeah. Horst is doing a tremendous job, and I did something this evening that I've not done before. I posted one of Horst's links over at Democratic Underground. I finally remembered what I found, remembered whatever my Democratic Underground login, and have been wandering around there a little bit, and I posted over there. So if you're new to the program, you've wandered over from Democratic Underground, God bless you, and welcome. If you hang around long enough, I think you'll fall in love. Not with me, but with the idea, the program, the show, the concept. Conversation radio. Radio unlike anything else you can hear anywhere else. But anyway, the Buy Gold Now story. So yesterday, according to our buddy over at Stop Beck, Glenn was doing one of his usual, you know, several times a show pitches. And I don't have an exact transcript, but it's worth noting. He said in his exhortation to his knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing followers, in an effort to get them to buy into the idea of gold, and there's another gold story beyond this one. He said, and you know the usual pitch, "There's never been a better time to buy gold. Buy gold now. Gold is your best hedge against inflation. Gold is the best investment mankind has ever had, going back thousands and thousands of years. Buy gold now." Right? Well, then the Beckerhead follows it up with this. "You know, what you have to be is you have to be smart. You gotta think. You gotta think about the coming dark days. What you've gotta do, the reason you want to buy gold from Goldline, is because you want to think like a Jew in Nazi Germany in 1935. Whoop! Wow. You've got to think like a Jew in Nazi Germany in 1935, because you know what? That is just like America in 2010. Just like it. Exactly. It's a direct one-to-one correlation, right? But you can't help but pay attention to this kind of stuff, because it never happens one thing at a time. There's always something following. There's always one more bit of lunacy just a little bit further down the path. And what I mean is this. There's an organization out there called Weiss Research, Money and Markets. And Weiss Research has sent out a gold investing alert How stupid are right-wingers to fall for this kind of stuff? I am in the wrong business. If I had even an iota of Elmer Gantry in me, I would be doing right-wing talk radio and hustling gold all day long. Instead, I sit here and I ask people to pony up 5 cents an hour for the program. You know, 10 bucks a month. But on the right wing, you can do people out of their entire retirement portfolios by telling them the following. I wish I was kidding. Dear reader, there's an urgent situation you should be aware of immediately. A new law, hidden deep in the 956-page health care reform bill, will drastically affect your gold investments. Could this be part of a U.S. government scheme to take away the right to own gold from the citizens as soon as possible? Yet despite that threat, very few Americans know about this law and the severe invasion of privacy it would cause. Even fewer have taken the necessary steps to preserve their wealth. God, you can almost hear the clop, 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 clop of the ominous footfalls down a darkened stairwell behind some poor, innocent right-winger who hasn't bought their gold yet. I want to warn you. The law is already on the books. It takes effect at the beginning of 2012. By then, it might not be safe or profitable for you to own gold coins, gold bullion, gold bars, or even an ETF that holds gold. But there is one gold investment class protected from this law. And in the past 2 years, this unique gold investment could have made you 975%, 12 times more than physical gold. Fact is, more than physical gold. It's intangible gold. It's chocolate gold. Imaginary gold. And it profits to the tune of 975 imaginary percent. The new law could make this investment even more valuable. Turning $10,000 into $97,500 could be just the start. The official law is in Section 9006, 90006, of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. I had no idea. Thank God for Weiss Research. Let's all say the Pledge of Allegiance, Jesus. Very few people have read at all the 10,909 sections of that bill, and even fewer understand the ramifications of Section 90006 on gold. The health care bill has nothing to do with gold. Which is exactly why Congress hid the law there. Wait, that's Priceline, isn't it? Never mind. They certainly weren't going to put out a press release when they're taking away the rights of private citizens. There it is. Freeze-dried gold. I think we even mentioned this on the program the other night. One-third the weight and 12 times as valuable. Just add hot wing nut. Oh, this thing goes on and on. And it closes. Their ruse appears to be working. Oh, that inscrutable Obama! He's probably going to get all our gold and trade it to India for mangoes! Wait, that was George Bush. Because the urgent gold investing alert was headed thusly. President Obama wants to confiscate your gold. Buried deep inside the health care reform bill is a law that could set the stage for the federal government to take away all your gold. Get your hands off my gold, you filthy ape!
By 2012, it probably won't be safe to own gold bars, rare coins, or gold ETFs. How stupid is the right wing? Honestly. I mean, do they sit there listening to their little Glenn Beck programs? Marvelline! Marvelline, our gold bullion ain't safe no more! That's all right, dear, we ain't got none. What? That Obama, he's still communist! Yes, dear. God, I wish he'd go back to watching Gunsmoke. Eesh. But they do. They believe this stuff. And they sit around and they talk in their little wingnut groups about it, never realizing that they're being had. They can't even keep their story straight. We're not sure if you're supposed to buy freeze-dried gold or the real stuff. It depends on whether or not you're thinking like a Jew in Nazi Germany in 1935. Amazing. But that's just the beginning of the program. There's a million other things. I wanted to start with a couple of stories because they're sort of distantly kissing cousins. On the one hand, today is a bit of an anniversary. I don't know if you realize this or not. Maybe you do. You know, out there in the wide, wide world of law, there is something called statute of limitations. We often think about them in terms of like 2 years. You know, you got a car wreck, you got 2 years to file suit, yeah, that kind of stuff. But generally,